on this fifth day of July 2011 in San Diego. We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Starting a new chapter, chapter 3, entitled Karma Yoga, text 1. Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Jayasi Chet Karmanaste,
Jayasi Chet Karmanaste,
Mata Buddhir Janardana,
Mata Buddhir Janardana,
Tatkin Karmani Gore Mam,
Tatkin Karmani Gore Mam,
Niyojayasi Keshava,
Niyojayasi Keshava.
Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than food at work? Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the previous chapter, with a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief. And the path of realization has been recommended, Buddhi Yoga, or Krishna Consciousness. Sometimes Krishna consciousness is misunderstood to be inertia, and one with such a misunderstanding often withdraws to a secluded place to become fully Krishna conscious by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. But without being trained in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it is not advisable to chant the holy name of Krishna in a secluded place where one may acquire only cheap adoration from the innocent public. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddhi Yoga, or intelligence in spiritual advancement of knowledge, as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. Om Jnanat Madandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, the theme in the latter part of the second chapter was Buddhi Yoga, linking one's intelligence to Krishna. Bhakti Yoga with the emphasis on use of the intelligence. And from text 52, Krishna spoke about how when your intelligence is beyond the moha, your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that's been heard and everything that will be heard. In 53, he again uses the word intelligence. When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flower, then you will have attained divine consciousness. The word buddhi is there. And then Arjuna asks a question about stitta pragya. Stitta pragya means fixed intelligence. And there's a whole series of verses in which the intelligence and the consciousness is emphasized, not the action. Of course, at the beginning of this chapter, the whole issue is whether Arjuna will fight or not. And we understand that the ideal is that one work for Krishna and at the same time keep his mind and intelligence on him. But in the latter part of the second chapter, getting a peaceful intelligence, you remember that, how can one attain peace? That was the theme here. Who is the peaceful man? He's like the ocean, the waves come, the rivers come in, and he's not disturbed. So with all of this emphasis on peace and the intelligence, Arjuna thinks, well, then where does this? Why do I have to fight the battle? I mean, let me just attain a peaceful intelligence and everything's fine. So now comes karma yoga. And then Krishna is now going to emphasize the need to act and at the same time remain free from reactions to that activity. In other words, the mind, the intelligence, is not meant to be attached to the fruits of the action. That's what karma yoga is all about. So that's what this first verse is about. Arjuna is facing a dilemma that may very well come up for us also, or someone who's first entering into the field of yoga. It seems to be something that really you're engaged in, you know, the mind is meant to be fixed on Krishna, intelligence meant to be pacified and controlled. So why can't I just sit? You know, why can't I just go off to the forest? That was Arjuna's original idea. So Krishna will now emphasize the need for action, non-food of action, akarma, or acting in such a mood that one doesn't incur any attachment for the fruit and doesn't incur any good or bad reaction, sukriti or duskriti. So, any questions on this verse? All right, let's move on. Vyamishrene vavakyena buddhi mohayasiva me tadekam vada nishchitya yena shreyo hamapnuyam. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Purport. In the previous chapter, as a prelude to the Bhagavad Gita, many different paths were explained, such as Sankhya Yoga, Buddhi Yoga, control of the senses by intelligence, work without food of desire, and the position of the neophyte. This was all presented unsystematically in the last chapter. A more organized outline of the path would be necessary for action and understanding. Arjuna, therefore, wanted to clear up these apparently confusing matters so that any common man could accept them without misinterpretation. Although Krishna had no intention of confusing Arjuna by any jugglery of words, Arjuna could not follow the process of Krishna consciousness, either by inertia or by active service. In other words, by his questions, he is clearing the path of Krishna consciousness for all students who seriously want to understand the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, going on. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Lokesmin Vibhadhanishta Pura Prokta Mayanaga Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam Karma Yogena Yoginam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. In the second chapter, verse 39, the Lord explained two kinds of procedures, namely Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. Okay, let's turn to text 39. 239, we find... Eshate bihita sange buddhi yoga chiman chunu buddhya yukto yaya parthakama bhavanam prahasis. Thus far I have described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O Sanapita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. So this whole lesson on the soul from text 11 to 30 is more or less Sankhya. You're separating the understanding of the spirit from matter, or the soul from the body. That's the essence of Sankhya. And then after that, he talks about how one has to work with one-pointed attention and focused on the Supreme. So then he's talking about working without food of result. That's the key. So these two things have been mentioned in the last chapter. In this verse, the Lord explains... Now we're back on text 3 of chapter 3. In this verse, the Lord explains the same more clearly. Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of nature of spirit and matter, is the subject matter for persons who are inclined to speculate and understand things by experimental knowledge and philosophy. The other class of men work in Krishna consciousness, as it is explained in the 61st verse of the second chapter. That's Tani Sovani Sangyam Ya. Let's check that one out. Yeah, tani sovani sangyamya yukta asita matpara pashahi yasyandriyani tasya pragyapatishtita. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Now again, this is the first verse Krishna talks about himself as the object, matparaha. This is in the Bhagavad Gita. So, the Lord has explained also in the 39th verse that by working by the principles of buddhi yoga, or Krishna consciousness, one can be relieved from the bonds of action. And furthermore, there is no flaw in the process. The same principle is more clearly explained in the 61st verse, that this buddhi yoga is to depend entirely on the Supreme, or more specifically on Krishna. And in this way, all the senses can be brought under control very easily. Therefore, both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. And now comes this famous sentence. Religion without philosophy is sentiment or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. It's worth memorizing that one. The ultimate goal is Krishna, because the philosophers who are also sincerely searching after the absolute truth come in the end to Krishna consciousness. That is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone remember where? 7:19. Bahunam Janmanamanti. The whole process is to understand the real position of the self in relation to the super self. The indirect process is philosophical speculation, by which gradually one may come to the point of Krishna consciousness. And the other process is directly connecting everything with Krishna in Krishna consciousness. Of these two, the path of Krishna consciousness is better because it does not depend on purifying the senses by a philosophical process. Krishna consciousness is itself the purifying process, and by the direct method of devotional service, it is simultaneously easy and sublime. So the idea here is that just trying to understand, if you just sit down and read the Bhagavad Gita, don't do anything else, that's very good. But you'll have a very difficult time becoming self-realized just by that process. Because there's so much of this knowledge is mysterious. As Krishna says in the 9th chapter, again in the 18th chapter, guhyatamam. It's very confidential knowledge. It's not simply understood by the mind, the senses, and the intellect, the power of reason. Again, we return to chapter 13 and those 20 elements or so, I think it's 20, of knowledge from text 8 to 11, where it's a whole lifestyle presented. Amanat vam, adambit vam, ahangsa, chantir arjavam. Those are the first four processes of knowledge, Krishna says. Humility, amanat vam. Lack of deceit, honesty, sincerity, adambit vam. Non-violence, tolerance means forgiveness if someone insults you. That kind of tolerance especially is emphasized by the word chanti. Worshipping the spiritual man, cleanliness. How does all this pertain to knowledge? It purifies the senses, purifies the minds, puts one in the mode of goodness, and in the proper receptive mood by which one can begin to become enlightened from both within and without. Just to try to read the Bhagavad Gita and speculate, that was going on for hundreds of years before Prabhupada came to America. And nobody became a devotee. Because the knowledge is not like that. Krishna, he enlightens from within. Very important section in the 10th chapter. For those who are worshipping me by the devotional path, what is that? That's spoken a couple of verses earlier. Placing their mind on me, always glorifying me, meeting together, talking about me, serving me. For them, I enlighten them from within and destroy the darkness of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Others, if they're not serving, if they're not in that mood, if they're not gaining a taste for glorifying me, they cannot understand. So that's the part that involves the intelligence. But it also involves the senses. All parts of one's being are engaged. And so these work together. It's not that we just work and we don't use the mind and intelligence. You don't get very far that way. The idea is to work for Krishna and understand at the time you're working who you're working for. The pure karma yogi, you know, they may have a job out there, they work very hard, they're not thinking of Krishna. They're not among the devotees, they're, you know, working, but they know that, okay, give a good portion of the fruits for Krishna consciousness. They still understand that. And that portion that they give, is they're not attached to it anymore. And whatever work they did for gaining that money or whatever it may be, there's no reaction to it because they've given the fruits over to Krishna. But karma yoga is just the first step. One has to come to the point of understanding what one is doing as one works. But both are important. Therefore, the Sankhya yoga, the analytical use of the intelligence, as well as the karma yoga, the action in Krishna consciousness are necessary. Okay, any questions on this point? This will be elaborated on here. Yes, Alec.
You mentioned being in the mood of goodness in order to receive the knowledge that's in Bhagavad Gita. But is it absolutely necessary to be in the mood of goodness in order to receive it?
You can come from any mode to Krishna consciousness. But what I'm saying is, if someone is, people read the Bhagavad Gita for all kinds of reasons. It's hard to read the Bhagavad Gita as it is and come to any other conclusion besides Krishna consciousness. But there are a lot of other Bhagavad Gitas out there. And people are reading them or studying them, like these academics. They're not in the mode of goodness. They don't aspire to be in the mode of goodness. It is part of a curriculum or is part of something, you know, that they're doing. So what are they really going to get out of it? Can they really get the essence of the Bhagavad Gita? The essence of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. It's Krishna, you know, as the source of everything, the support, the inspirer, the one to whom we have to worship and surrender to. These academics are not going to come near that point. They try to take Krishna out of it. Even this guy, Radhakrishnan, who probably is like a foil. You know what a foil is in a movie? He's like someone who the protagonist works off of and helps bring out the protagonist's heroic qualities. So he's a foil for Prabhupada in one sense. He keeps blasting him in this book and also other books. That's Renunciation Through Wisdom. There's a whole chapter on that, that one verse. 934, where this guy who was the vice president or the president of Krishna, of India at one point, he explained 934, which is like an essential verse. It's repeated. It's practically the only verse that's repeated in the Gita, you know, almost word for word. Which says, you know, Krishna says, here's the conclusion in the 18th chapter. Says, this is the, again, I repeat, the most secret of all secret knowledge. Just think of me, become my devotee, worship me. Offer your homage to me. You'll certainly come to me. I promise you, you're my very dear friend. So that verse, 934, that was more or less 1865 I was quoting, but it's the same idea. He said, no. It's not to Krishna that we have to surrender. It's to the unborn, unlimited that speaks through Krishna. Those are fighting words for the bhakta. There's no unborn that's speaking through Krishna. It's Krishna himself. Deha, what is it? I was just reading that. There's an interesting, you know, editorial pastimes going on. There's a manuscript page for the Bhagavad Gita that was just discovered. Just discovered now, after all these years, in the archives. And in that Bhagavad Gita page, there is a handwritten sentence by Prabhupada directly to this subject. Is it in the ninth chapter? Maybe it's not. I forget which chapter it's in. But he makes this point. Prabhupada makes this point. You know, again, I forget how he words it, that there are some fools who try to interpret, you know, that there's something speaking through Krishna or whatever. You know. So the question is, should we put that sentence back in or not? What do you think? Should it be returned to the next printing of the Bhagavad Gita? I mean, my vote doesn't count. Of course, I don't think it should be there. But there are some out there who maybe think that. So Jayavaita Maharaj, he put it on the internet and he's asking for opinions on it. So the idea is that if you don't follow the process of bhakti, then you're going to take the words of the Bhagavad Gita and twist them for your own purposes. So yes, it's important to be in the mode of goodness or in general, you know, to practice the principles of bhakti, including the, I don't want to say sub-religious principles, but the principles that just, you know, get up early in the morning, take a shower. I mean, that's just human life, you know. That's just human life. But it brings you, you know, to the mode of goodness where you can better understand this philosophy. It doesn't ensure that you will, but it makes it much easier. You know, that's the idea. But don't get me wrong, you can chant Hare Krishna from any position. Anyone, any time, in any mode, any species of life can chant Hare Krishna. And by doing that, you get on the elevator, you know, rapid advancement. But the chances are that if you don't come in the association and practice and purify yourself, it'll be a long road before you get to that point. All right, moving on. Text 4. Nikarmanamanarambhan Naiskarmyam purushoshnute Nachasanyasanareva Siddhim samadigacchati. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Purport. The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of the prescribed form of duties which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification, one cannot attain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life, sannyas. According to the empirical philosophers, simply by adopting sannyas, or retiring from fruitive activities, one at once becomes as good as Narayan. But Lord Krishna does not approve this principle. Without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duties, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord, Buddha Yoga. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trahyate mahato vayat. Even a slight performance of such a principle enables one to overcome great difficulties. So now here, this is the first use of it, I may be wrong, of the word naishkarmya. Naishkarmya is a highly coveted state in the Vedic culture. It means not incurring any karma. But as Narada Muni says, naishkarmyam apavyachudabhava varjitam nishopate gyanam alangnananjanam, that so-called naishkarmya, and he's speaking of the impersonalist now, that doesn't have any conception of achyuta or Krishna, doesn't look very well. Gyanam along niranjanam, even if so-called knowledge that attained to this is niranjanam, may be free from the grosser modes of material nature and selfishness. If it's impersonalism, it doesn't look well. And ultimately, one cannot sustain that. This is the whole point, is that mayavad, or impersonal realization, is ultimately unfulfilling. It doesn't fulfill the ultimate aspirations of the deepest soul, of the self, which is to be connected back with Krishna. We, in our deepest recesses of our mind, we know that we're persons. Right? Who wants to be a non-person? You know, what happens is that the impersonalist, as explained in the fourth chapter of text 10, is that by seeing the misery of material personhood, of having a material body and being attached to material things, they decide that I don't want these attachments, therefore I can't be a person, because person means senses and senses means attachment. They completely forget that there is a spiritual world, a supreme spiritual person whose senses are completely spiritual, untainted in the slightest by the modes of nature. They've forgotten that out of deep envy of the Lord. So the answer is to don't act fruitively at all, you know. Then what do I do? You know, as Krishna says here, or as he says in the next verse, you can't do nothing. You can never do nothing. Even if you just sit down and meditate, your mind is active. You know, and if you work, you know, it's work to try to focus on, you know, on the mandala or on the whatever, the bright light. That's work. It's mental work. It may be intelligent work. It's not physical work, but you're still working. You're doing something. And that comes up later. Karma, what is it? One who sees action in inaction and inaction in action. So what does that mean? Is that if you're inactive physically, I'm looking at someone meditating perfectly still, one sees, oh, he's active. You know, even if he's asleep, he's still active. The mind is going, you know, you're dreaming of something. You can't, the soul is by nature active. And if someone, but a devotee who's very active, you know, like Prabhupada was so active, but he wasn't acting, he wasn't incurring any karma. You know what I'm saying? In a sense, he was simply allowing himself to be used by Krishna. That's not action in the sense of karmic that gets some fruit. You see? So that's inaction, inaction. So the key is, what is the motive by which you're acting, and what is the structure of authority by under which you're acting? That will determine the result of the action, whether it's liberating or binding. And that's what he's talking about now. So just by stopping action, because this was what Arjuna wanted to do. He didn't want to fight the battle. He wanted to go off and meditate somewhere, you know, to avoid what he perceived, you know, as a sin of killing all his friends and relatives. So he says, that's not going to get free. You're not going to get free of sin that way. In fact, you'll be acting sinfully by doing it. And you won't enjoy naishkarmya. This is something to be enjoyed, something to be coveted, naishkarmya. We're into that, but it has to be done through bhakti. So sannyas means, you know, literally giving up. So the Prabhupada talks about an artificial kind of sannyas. It's a negative thing. You know, sannyas to escape, you know, that's part of it. You want to escape the entanglement. But if that's all it is, then it just causes suffering. Dukkha mayogata. Is that the beginning of the next chapter? Yeah, that's in the beginning, next chapter, fifth chapter. Fifth chapter. That the so-called sannyas without yoga, without bhakti, is just brings misery. And you know, there's a record of it. And sannyasis go, they don't have the bhakti, and they degrade themselves. They become, you know, they start to have girlfriends out, you know. It's not possible to control those senses on the negative path. It has to be by the positive engagement. So that's and there's no perfection in that, in such artificial sannyas. So basically, he's telling him, you got to work. You know, like in the sixth chapter at the beginning, there's a lot of work to be done. And when you come to Krishna consciousness, you engage the senses. You know, we do so many things. We're supposed to do them all day. You know, and then fall asleep. You know, in like 5 seconds. Dream of Krishna, get up next day. That's the ideal. All right, any questions on this? Okay. Yes, Prabhu,
so, since the soul is eternally active, what sort of state do impersonalists achieve? Because they can go to the Brahma Yogi, can't they?
The thing is, the action, like I said, there's an action of the mind in meditating. So they don't want to, you know, unless they're Buddhas, I guess, they don't want to erase the soul. They want to be conscious. So what happens in the Brahma Jyoti? You're conscious, some kind of a mind, and you have to keep thinking of that absolute, you know, there's an effort there. You have to keep thinking of that white light. But unfortunately, the soul has deep impressions from time immemorial, from eternity, of relationship, you know. And so eventually you come down, because they don't have any place to land. They can't land at Krishna's lotus feet. They're averse to worshiping Krishna's lotus feet. So this intelligence is not purified. It all comes down to that. What's the impurity? The I principle. I want to be free. I'm the supreme, right? I'm no different from this white light I'm merged into. Aham Brahmasmi, you know, but that's big ego, a last snare of Maya.
Right? I think there are two verses that clearly say it's not even a position of liberation, because one is Mukti Hitva Nyatha Rupam, so
right.
Another one is Lord Rishabhdev is saying
Priti and Yavan.
Priti and Yavan Vasudev Nar Muchyate.
Right, according to Bhagavatam, the Mukti cannot be devoid of form. Form means senses and activity. So it's a false kind of liberation. That's explained in the 10th. Canto chapter 2, the prayers of the demigods, that famous verse. So that's why it says, vimukta manina. They think they're liberated. It means that they have the idea, but they're not really liberated. Because prijna yavan maya, there's no liberation without love for Krishna.
And that can be compared to dreaming that one has awoken from a dream.
Exactly. That's a good, that's in the Bhagavatam also.
Yeah, that's also.
That's also in the Bhagavatam. All right, let's read the next one. Nahi kaschit chanamapi.
Nahi kaschit chanamapi.
Jatutishcha chakarma krit.
Jatutishcha chakarma krit.
Karyate yavashakarma.
Karyate yavashakarma.
Sarvak prakriti jayagunai. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Purport, it is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes. And to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. The Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.17 affirms this. Tukvasva dharmam chadanam bhujang hader bhajan apakvo tapate tato yadi yatra kvava bhadram abhud amushya kim. If someone takes to Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties in the shastras or execute the devotional service properly, and even though he may fall down from the standard, there is no loss or evil for him. But if he carries out all the injunctions for purification in the shastras, what does it avail him if he is not Krishna conscious? So the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sannyas, or any purificatory process, is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure. Now, it's worth mentioning here that in the highest stages of devotional service, one is kind of active on two planes. The realized soul, who has realized his swarup, talk about mukti hitva, swarupena vyavastha, he's situated in his swarup. In other words, he understands his eternal form in the spiritual world. So it's not just understanding it, it's also being active in that form, internally. You know, just like, I mean, you can sometimes, you know, understand it. You're maybe sitting here, or you're sitting in a class somewhere, but you're a million miles away. You're off having an adventure somewhere, you know. And your mind is active, right, in some subtle form that you've created. You know? It's like a dream, a daydream. And you have your night dream, same thing. So you can act on this. The senses themselves are inert. You're lying on the bed at night, or you're sitting, you know, inert in your class or whatever. So the great realized soul actually is understanding and active within, on that plane, in the eternal swarup in relation to Krishna. And that continues regardless of the state of the external, and eventually the external body will stop at death. But that real activity of the soul continues, and that's really because you're in your eternal body. So, in the conditioned state, the soul is kind of trapped, or he's under control. This word vasha is used. Where is that? Avasha, helplessly. You know, avasha. You can't control. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti. We are within this purusha. We act as the enjoyer. So we're known as the purusha within prakriti, and we're in the modes. The modes are controlling our mind. You know, and our activities. We think we're independent, but actually we're being controlled by that. So that's why he says helplessly, according to the qualities we have acquired from the modes. So as you associate, you acquire certain modes. They act on you more predominantly, one goodness, passion, ignorance, like that. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. So we all kind of have experienced that, you know, tinges of the mode of ignorance, passion, or, you know, before you came. You didn't know anything about the modes, but you had a certain way of thinking about yourself and acting in society. And maybe now you're aghast at how you used to act in those ways, you know. But you were acting. You were being forced to act. So the idea here in this Karma Yoga chapter is that you can't just immediately stop that activity, nor can you immediately change the modes that are predominant on you. It's a process of purification. So Bhakti Yoga takes that activity, like someone is very passionate. Okay, you know, clean the whole temple. Or kirtan, you know, very active, the environment. Painting, creativity, whatever it may be, be able to fix things, you know. Use that propensity, which is now, you know, keeping you in the modes and attached and degrading you, for Krishna. The very same activity that used to degrade you can now exalt you. Eating, for one, you know. Everyone's got to eat. But if you eat prasadam, you get purified. If you eat McDonald's, you go to hell. So that's the idea behind Karma Yoga. Don't stop. Keep working. But work for Krishna. And at the same time, cultivate the finer sentiments in the internal aspect of Krishna consciousness. You can't do one without the other. If you just work and you don't chant your rounds, you'll be out of here in one day. If you just try to chant your rounds all day, most of us couldn't do that. We'd become frustrated and sleep. So both have to be there. Now this verse Prabhupada quotes all the time. It's part of Narada's instructions to Vyasadeva for writing the Bhagavatam. And the idea is that Swadharma ultimately is not going to get us back to Godhead. Swadharma is your natural psychophysical nature that you've acquired, you know, due to your karma. And we all have one. Generally fits into these different varnas, right? Brahminical qualities, Kshatriya qualities, Vaishya qualities, Shudra qualities. So if someone gives all that up and joins the Hare Krishnas, right? But after some time, I like this word, apakva, you know, not cooked. His Krishna consciousness is not well done. And falls away from the path. So what did you lose? You know, then you may go out and It seems like, oh, I lost all that time. But no, you didn't lose anything. You gained. That whatever you did in Krishna consciousness is to your eternal asset. So Narada says, where is there anything inauspicious? Yatra kvavabhadram. You know. But if someone very nicely follows the Swadharma and becomes a very nice plumber or, you know, whatever in this world, or, you know, what did you gain? Ultimately nothing, because all of that is going to be lost at death. You know, you go on to another chapter and you have no assets in Krishna consciousness. So he's making a very important point here, is that it's always auspicious to practice, to serve Krishna in every respect, from whatever platform. It's never a loss. Even though it may seem that people come and go, what progress have they made? They made progress. They made some progress. We want to become greedy. Why just make some progress? Let's make all the progress. you have to, you know, really strive in order to go back to God in one life. But even if we're not able to do it, maybe a couple more births, hopefully, you know. What is that compared to the millions of births we've had already? So everything is all auspicious here. So we have to, we're in the modes, we come with the modes, use whatever qualities we have in Krishna's service, and Krishna will take care of the purification. Yeah.
My question about some language that the Prabhupada used here is saying that the spiritual soul acquires the three modes and to purify the soul. It seems like the soul is like a cloth that actually gets dirty, needs to be, the cloth itself needs to be washed.
It's a way of speaking. We know that the soul is never affected by, you know, never mixes, right? We know from the 13th chapter. But it's a question of consciousness or the mind, you know. Yeah.
But it could convey that meaning.
Yeah, so you have to read the whole book to find out this. Okay, we can do another one. So now he makes it conscious. Karmendriyani
samyamya.
Yaaste manasasmaran.
Yaaste manasasmaran.
Indriyartham vibhudhatma.
Indriyartham vibhudhatma.
Mityacharak sauchite.
Mityacharak sauchite.
One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Purport. There are many pretenders who refuse to work in Krishna consciousness, but make a show of meditation, while actually dwelling within the mind upon sense enjoyment. Such pretenders may also speak on dry philosophy in order to bluff sophisticated followers. Maybe unsophisticated. I'll look that one up. But according to this verse, these are the greatest cheaters. For sense enjoyment, one can act in any capacity of the social order. But if one follows the rules and regulations of his particular status, he can make gradual progress in purifying his senses. But he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the object of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater, even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy. His knowledge has no value, because the effects of such a sinful man's knowledge are taken away by the illusory energy of the Lord. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value. So this recalls the kurma. Remember Krishna said, Yada sangharade chayam kurma gandhi visarvasa indriyasyate tasipagabhatishtita. So if one withdraws the senses, but his intelligence is not really fixed on Krishna, then it's just a show. And ultimately you will see people can't maintain that for very long. You know, you can't, it's just like someone who's addicted to some drug or eating, you know. They may, you know, by force of circumstances or force of will, or maybe they go to some association or retreat, and they're able to withdraw from that sense object, you know. But it's artificial. They haven't really purified themselves of the desire for it. The desire is still in there. That's Vishyavani Vartante. So this is, you know, describing, don't be fooled by someone who looks like they're very renounced, but inside you can see that they're still thinking of all of these objects of the senses. That's not what it's all about. Such a person is known as a mitya achara. Mitya means a cheating actor, you know, someone who's a pretender. So, you know, Krishna consciousness also, unfortunately, we find that, you know, there's all kinds of people who join the Krishna consciousness movement, And if you're not actually able to make any internal progress of refining your chanting and getting attached to, you know, the hearing and chanting, then all of the show of devotion ultimately is not going to protect you. It has to be an internal transformation. That's what it's all about. So we can, you know, be careful that we don't fall into that trap. That's why Rupa Goswami, in his Upadeshamrita, he speaks about that, the things that impediments of devotion. Atyahara priyasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha laulyam cha shadvi bhakti pranashyati. Over collecting, overeating, over endeavoring for mundane things, speaking too much of mundane subject matters, and niyamagraha. Now, niyamagraha has two meanings. It means neglecting to regularly perform the prescribed duties, or it means performing them externally but having no real internal, just doing, going through the motions externally without, you know, really making the endeavor to get into the mood of what you're doing and to focus on it and to undergo an internal transformation. And that cannot last. If you're just going through the motions, eventually you'll have better things to do. You know, you have to really. That's why I always stress understanding the meaning of what we're saying or what we're hearing and singing in the morning program. Every word, every syllable has its significance, and the more you can understand it, the more, you know, your benefit you'll get out of the program. So hopefully we can do that when I get back from Canada. We can have more regular study of these, the meaning of things. Okay, any question on this verse? Yes, go ahead, Vern.
What is the difference, like what is the, I mean, if some people do make internal advancement after a certain time period of practice, others do not, what is the difference, what happens?
You know, it's like, it boils down to, what's really in your heart? Like, we're discussing the mood of chanting Hare Krishna. This is really like the basic sadhana, you know, that we do, is the japa chanting. You know, that's a key thing, basic. So what is it that you feel? Why are you chanting? What are you thinking of as you chant? Prabhupada gave this perfect, you know, recommendation. It should be like a child calling for its mother. In other words, you're feeling helpless, you're feeling the Lord is your protector and He can save you, and in that way. It has to
be. Why somebody is able to feel that, the other person is not able? Why somebody keeps on maintaining material desires and others is able to chant?
It's a question of prayer. I mean, this is why, you know, prayer is good, because what I mean by that is really adopting, you know, some of the prayer, like Lord Chaitanya's beautiful prayers in the Shikshastika, basic prayers. Nadanang nadanang nasundari. Okay, I don't... Wealth and women, followers, the fruits of mundane piety, liberation from this world of limitless anxiety. But,
so many people are reading that, right? So
no, but listen to me now. For me, O Lord, these common goals have not the slightest worth. Let me serve you purely now and in each future birth. So the idea is that, okay, so I say it 100 times, okay? and I understand the meaning, but I really haven't entered into that because I still want some money, and Barbacharini looks pretty good, you know. So I can't really say I don't want it, right? But by repeating it, by coming for the Lord, by chanting, by dancing, this as-if principle. In other words, Krishna, from within, He purifies so that at one point, sometimes I think we're chanting all these rounds, and then just so that at one point, you'll actually, you know, say Krishna from the bottom of your heart, and that'll be the point at which you break through. You know what I'm saying? It's really like that. We keep doing the, you know, same thing. But it's just like in church. You know, you see there's somebody that's singing these songs. Some people are getting into it, some people aren't, you know. And it's not some external determination. It's something that comes from within. You know, if you really, it's that key word, but that, you know, that slippery meaning of sincerity has to be there, you know. And so much of it is really your actions. Is that, okay, are you going to do the service or not? Just like Arjun, you know, the bottom line is, he going to fight or not? If he doesn't fight, he really hasn't heard the Gita. He hasn't understood. He may say, yes, I understand. But at the end, he says, Kadashe vachanang tava. I'll do as you say. So, you know, I don't understand what how to attain humility. You know, I chant, and my mind is, okay, fine, we understand that. Clean the bathroom. No. Then you can't do it. If you say yes, okay, and by your mind you do that, then you make some progress. You actually make some progress because it's a humble act. It's a humbling act. That's how to become humble. Do humbling acts. All this bowing down we do, what's the point of it? You know? Because the very act of bowing down, snandabats, you know, with these eight limbs, and you know, uttering the words. I was reading this. What does dandabats mean? It's in the 11th canon, these eight things. Let's see if I can remember. The feet, the knees, the arms, the head, the voice, the mind, and the eyes are all involved. Now, sometimes I see, maybe we're supposed to do that. I don't know. As you bow down to look, to turn your head and look. And how are the eyes involved in dandabats?
But that's looking at the floor.
You look at the floor, I know, but I think you're supposed to look at the deity. But anyway, you know, that's real. Okay, I've done it 1,000 times, say. But I really haven't, you know, gotten into the mood. But then that 1,001st time, I'm really feeling, here I am, helpless. You know, I really, really feel that all of these, you know, facilities that I have belong to you, Krishna. They belong to you, Prabhupada. Use them as you like.
Maybe the eyes are involved in the sense that tears are flowing from my
eyes. But you see my point, Varun? You know, the idea is that there's no external determination. That's really where the bhakti, you know, comes or it doesn't come. One has to desire, or desire to desire. The problem is we don't even desire to desire. You know? It's kind of just like all these things flowing through, but at one point we have to want to do it, and then Krishna will... Go ahead, Prabhu.
Nectar of instruction verse is a Shatvir Bhakti Vinashyati. At the same time, you understand Bhakti is eternal. And whatever we have, advancement we have attained on the path of devotion cannot be lost. So how can we say Vinashyati?
It's a matter of speaking. Vinashyati means it's broken for some time.
It can be.
You can postpone it for many, many births. Bahu Janma, you know, this verse, if you're not... Don't get rid of the offenses.
So you can put it on pause and go...
Put it on pause. We put it on pause. We keep putting it on pause. What were you going to ask, Alec?
So it's saying that someone who, you know, meditates externally but internally is thinking of sense objects is the greatest cheater.
He's a great cheater. I don't know if he says the greatest cheater, but yeah. He's the Mityachar.
Unless you're a pure devotee, isn't that the platform you're at? I mean, I know personally...
The point here is that there's no effort to not think of those things. It's not that, you know, of course the mind is going to wander. No, it's that, you know, you're making a show. You're making a show. That's the mitya. It's a cheating.
There's no sincerity there at all.
Yeah. In other words, and we have that, you know, these bogus yogis, they're doing this, you know, they're coming in and making money and getting girlfriends and all this business. You know, eventually it comes out because that's their real motive. You know, for devotees, you know, you can see the difference. They really can chant for hours and hours. These 12-hour, 24-hour kirtans are great. It proves that they're better yogis. They're chanting and chanting, and you really do. When the mind finally surrenders to the holy name, it becomes more and more enjoyable. You know, that not so for these mityachara. They get bored. Their legs. Okay, is it time? Have they seen me enough? Now let me go do something else. It's mitya. You can't keep up the farce forever. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.